Have you done bows before? No? Okay. When we do bows, we usually touch the crown of our head, and then our throat, and our heart, and then we put our hands on the floor and touch our forehead to the ground. And we do that 3 times, and we think of the teacher, and the teachings, and the spiritual community. So, set a good motivation before you do the vows, and if that's a little uncomfortable for you, you can just go like this and just really think of the most inspiring people in your life. Okay? Think of His Holiness the Dalai Lama or the Buddha, and set a good motivation.
Okay, we'll do the prayers. As you say the prayers, imagine thinking, imagine the Buddha in the space before you or your spiritual mentor. Really think that as you say the prayers, they are listening to you and hearing your requests, hearing what you're saying. So with a sense of openness and interest and deep respect, we'll say the prayers. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in my gurus. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. From the heart of the Lord of the Gandhandevas emerges a brilliant white cloud, like a great mass of fresh yogurt. Atop sits Tsongkhapa, all-knowing King of Dharma. We request your coming to this place, along with your great disciples. My Lord Guru is seated before me on a lion throne, lotus, and moon cushion. His white face smiles blissfully. Please remain many eons and serve as the supreme merit field for the growth of my mind of faith and for the increase of Lord Buddha's teachings. Your omniscient wisdom mind encompasses all that is existent. Your speech is a profound teaching which ornaments the ear of the fortunate. Your body's beautiful radiance evokes wondrous admiration. I prostrate to you, Lama Tsongkhapa, whom merely viewing, hearing, or contemplating earns one great merit. I present to you, supreme field of merit, Tsongkhapa, delightful offerings, pure sweet water, various flowers, fragrant incense, butter lamps, perfumes, and more, both physical and mental offerings, vast as the clouds and wide as the ocean. The unwholesome actions of body, speech, and mind I have accumulated since time without beginning, especially actions contrary to my three vows, Vinaya, Bodhisattva, Vajrayana. I regret extremely from the depths of my heart and reveal each and every such action. We totally rejoice in your magnificent achievements, my Lord. You strove for knowledge and realization, abandoned the eight worldly concerns, and made the most meaningful use of human life with the 18 opportune conditions during these degenerate times. Pray all you holy gurus, unerring in conduct, precipitate a rain of vast and profound dharma from the billowing clouds of wisdom and compassion which fill the Dharmakaya sky, providing for the field of disciples precisely what is needed. May the Vajra body, created from the purity of clear light, free of the rising and setting of cyclic existence, but visible to the ordinary viewer, only in its unsubtle physical form, stay on unchanging, without waning, until samsara ends. May whatever virtue I have gathered here beneficially serve all sentient beings and the Buddha Dharma, and especially may the essential teachings of the unerring master, Tsongkhapa, shine forever. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozang Drakpa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozang Drakpa, I humbly bow and earnestly request sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Jai Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the holy masters of the land of snows, you are Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of inconceivable compassion, untainted by ego's delusion. You are Manjushri, powerful master with stainless wisdom. You are Vajrapani, destroyer of forces of demons. At your feet, famed Lozang Drakpa, I humbly bow and earnestly request that all sentient beings achieve enlightenment. Glorious, precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at my crown, and in your kindness, please care for us. Bestow upon us the attainments of your body, speech, and mind. Glorious, precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at our hearts, and in your great kindness, care for us. Grant us your blessings for our temporal success and for the supreme attainment. Glorious, precious root guru, please take the lotus seat at our hearts, and in your great kindness, remain with us. Remain steadfast until we achieve the essence of enlightenment. Unthinkable, inexpressible, wisdom gone beyond, unborn, unceasing, space-like in essence, clearly perceived by wisdom mind, homage to the mother of the Buddhas of the three times. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. Gone, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, so be it. by the virtue of offering to you assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base, resplendent with flowers, saffron water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamiyatayami. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the highest assembly. From the virtuous merit of sharing the teachings, may I attain Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings. So Geshe-la has gone to Boston, and he'll be back on the 30th. So he'll be teaching again on the 31st, Halloween night. So I thought while he's gone that we could go over the seven causes and one effect, which he's taught several times lately, and that we would have a chance to discuss it a little bit and also to meditate on it a little bit. So to put Geshe-la's teachings into practice and to our own experience. So so let's make this somewhat interactive. What are the six causes? What is the first cause? Okay. All sentient beings have been our mothers. Okay, second one. Remembering the kindness of our mothers, good. Wanting to repay the kindness of our mothers, okay. Okay, the next one is love, cultivating love for all sentient beings, and then cultivating compassion. Good, good. And then number six?
Taking on the responsibility to do something about it.
Yeah, it's like the altruistic intention. It's called, Geshe-la translates it sometimes as extra thoughts, which is really cute. But it's like the altruistic intention, you know, the wish, the real wish to take it on yourself. And then the last one, the result is? Bodhicitta. Okay, how'd we do in that test?
Very well.
I have the notes. Okay. Okay, all sentient beings have been our mothers. Okay, this initially is a big leap for us, isn't it? To think of all sentient beings as our mothers. It's already assuming and having us take up this view that there's reincarnation, that I've had previous lives, that I'm going to continue on from here and have another life, and that that all beings have been my mothers. So it's a huge leap for us as Westerners who generally have been raised in a monotheistic religion where we've got two options after this. We've never been born before. This is our first life, our only life, and we've got two options at the end of it. Right. What are those options? Heaven and hell. Okay, so in the Buddhist view, we've got a few more options. What are those options? Hell. An animal rebirth. Hungry ghost. Yeah, somebody already said. Human, asura, and God realm. Okay, so we've got six different options, but how much choice do we actually have?
Zippo.
Zippo. Okay, so so we're really looking at the situation of what kind of conditions are we creating for what comes around after we die, okay? As it goes, some of us aren't even sure we're going to die, isn't it? So in Buddhism, the Buddha was really looking at the condition of our existence, noticed that there was suffering, and how do we relieve the suffering in our life so that we can really attain happiness, which is everyone's right, and how can we assist others in attaining that right? So, and what we're looking at is how do we have future rebirths, and where did we come from before? So in Buddhism, we're looking at the idea that the nature of the body is very different from the nature of consciousness. Okay, the nature of our body is our flesh, our organs, our senses, and all of that, but the nature of consciousness is clear and knowing. It's a completely different quality. Although we have this karmic connection of our mind and body at this time, at death they say that the body and subtle consciousness separate. So where does it go? And also, where did it come from? How did it come to be that we have this particular consciousness in this body? It's something that we really need to examine and consider, you know, which actually goes very much unconsidered and unexamined usually. We don't think about it very often. And so here, you know, as we do this, we could actually spend the whole day talking about this first cause that all sentient beings have been our mothers. But in looking at that, you know, if I had a previous life, if I have a future life, then I would have had a mother, okay? Except in some of the births, okay? On all of them you've had births, but a couple of them you don't have mothers. Do you know which ones those are in?
Hell.
Hell?
Sura.
Okay, so they talk about different kinds of birth. Remember? Born from eggs, born from heat, born from a womb, and spontaneous. Good, Jim. Okay, four different kinds of birth. And so, you know, and when you think about it, what gives us the common assumption that now that we're human, we're always going to be human if in fact we have future lives? Yeah, what? And isn't that kind of arrogant in a way to think, especially if the subtle consciousness leaves and that we have this subtle consciousness that goes on, what are the conditions that create a future human birth again? You know? So in looking at these six realms of existence, more options, remember, but some of them say that we don't have mothers in certain births, right? In hell, they say it's a spontaneous birth, you just go to hell, right? And so so there's no mother for hell beings. And then birth by heat and moisture, right? So in these other realms, when you think about it, our lives have been endless. If in fact, you know, we look and question, look at the view that the Buddhists present, that we've had countless lives, and so in most of those lives we've had mothers. So if we've had mothers, then, you know, you think about how is it that I've had this particular mother this lifetime? What were the causes that created the condition for me to have this particular mother? So all of these need to really be examined. And so we go into cause and effect about somehow we created conditions to be who we are now and to have the kind of family that we had or have, and created the conditions for the kind of mother that we had. So, you know, it's like, are we creating those conditions and causes to be a human being in our next life? And you think about, what are we putting our interest, time, and energy into? Because we keep creating causes for certain kinds of results. And when you think about it, you know, if we're constantly engaging in hunting, fishing, stealing, embezzling, lying, misconduct, etc., you know, think about that. Almost every action and activity that we engage in is in relationship to other beings. You know, we're interrelated with other beings, and we're creating causes for certain results later on in this life and then also in our future life. So according to the Buddhist view, then, you know, we're creating causes for the kind of life and the conditions that we create for the next time around. So even as we say refuge, you know, may I attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, that aspiration may be there, but we really need to look at what kind of causes are we creating as we engage in our activities, you know, to have harmonious relationships with others in the future, to live in a safe and good environment where we're not constantly being harassed or harmed by others. So again, you know, it's like thinking of all sentient beings have been our mothers. I think we need to think, go back to the essentials of really looking at how impermanent our life is, you know, that we will experience death, and that's where we're all heading. So in this way, you know, it's like they start with mothers, but you also think about your fathers and your brothers and your relatives and your family and all of this. So it's an interesting contemplation. So let's do that for about 3 minutes. Let's contemplate this first cause. All sentient beings have been our mothers. Think about the causes that we are creating also for our future. So we'll sit for about 3 minutes. Okay, any comment or question on this first cause? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. We focus in on one particular mother, but the comment Mamie made is that all sentient beings have been our mothers. It's really quite a powerful statement to consider that every one of you have been my mother and my father. Okay, so we'll go on. Mothers have been kind to us. Mothers meaning all sentient beings. Again, thinking of this endless round of birth and rebirth, again and again, until we get off this wheel of samsara, off the wheel of cyclic existence, that we are caught in this realm of continual birth and rebirth. So mothers have been kind to us. Again, think about how, you know, I think this process helps us to begin to understand and recollect, remind ourselves of the kindness of other beings to us. Because we also take this so much for granted, you know, that in fact, we accuse our mothers so much about not doing enough for us, isn't it? But in fact, they've been incredibly kind. And one of the sayings in the Tibetan text is, you know, that even if you carried your parents on your back for your entire life, you couldn't repay their kindness. You know? And so thinking about how they've been kind to us, you know, our mothers cared for us when we could not, when we were totally incapable of caring for ourselves. When we were disagreeable and obnoxious, they took care of us. when we didn't want to be cared for, they cared for us. When we were arrogant and willful, pretending that we didn't have parents, they took care of us. when our parents were exhausted, sick, disappointed in their own lives, having incredible troubles in their own lives, they took care of us. So, you know, think about how we've been as parents, if you are a parent, you know, and how we demand so much of our parents when they probably did not have many tools to work with. They did the best they could, given the condition of their own lives, of their resources, their limitations. You know? But again, think about how mothers represent all sentient beings. So there are animals who give us milk and cheese and honey, yeah, without giving their bodies. And then for us carnivores, yeah, that they give us their flesh and their blood and their hides and their labor. Incredible generosity so that we can survive. And we go around living our lives oblivious to the kindness that these creatures and other sentient beings provide us with. And then on the level of human beings, you know, how we, again, just take for granted the resources that other human beings provide for us. How, you know, just think if you had to build your own car in order to commute, or to build your own airplane before you could fly across the Pacific or the Atlantic. But in fact, beings are constantly upgrading and improving things like our transportation and our vehicle, other vehicles, our maps, our food, our cuisine. And we always want to try out more and better, more delicious places. No, but we just take it for granted when people are striving and really learning how to develop better things for us all the time. Yeah. So they do provide us incredible kindness. So again, the classic example is thinking about the kindness of friends, enemies, and strangers. Okay, it seems obvious that friends are kind to us. So, and strangers, as I've shared, that are improving our vehicles and our homes and our clothing, everything that we interact with. Think of the sentient beings that have created wonderful and better conditions for us. Okay, how about our enemies? How are they kind to us? Okay, let's let somebody who's chewing on this one. Someone, okay, go ahead.
They help us change.
They help us change. Can you give me an example?
Oh, they can create lots of suffering and bias. Trying to understand where these sufferings come from, mm-hmm. why they are our enemies, mm-hmm. what situation, you know, what's created to help us become better people.
Yes. Our enemies definitely cause us to, they stimulate our awareness a lot. They help us wake up to the condition of suffering and really spur us on to understand why are they creating suffering, why are they in suffering, and it helps improve our own understanding. Any other comment? Mm-hmm.
Like understanding the causes why they're doing this to us. By understanding these causes, we become better, we grow more spiritually. His Holiness remarked that, you know, finding an enemy is like finding a great treasure.
Yes.
This is why people are astounded whenever he speaks. You figure that he would have the right to have so much resentment that all of this happened, but he doesn't.
Right. Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah. So to really think about how they our enemies give us great cause for waking up to the condition of our life and to really deepen our practice. Yeah? And His Holiness also says that it's when we can practice with our enemies that's true practice. Yeah? When we're practicing with our friends, of course we're going to help them, and we're very easily forgiving and tolerant. But when it's our enemies, yeah, how much more challenging they are. Okay.
I just wanted to say, it's like the pseudo-ness of mind. The mind has created the enemy.
The mind creates the enemy?
The mind has created the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes we definitely amplify it and exaggerate it.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes our experiences is definitely real. You know, if someone's overtly harming, in a warring condition, when we are experiencing suffering in many ways. But yeah, it's true. What tends to happen is that the mind exaggerates and definitely colors it. Colors it more suffering, more intensity. It's true. Okay, so let's focus on that, contemplate that for a few moments. How our mothers have been kind to us. Okay, our mothers, all sentient beings. You might want to work on a friend, an enemy, or a stranger. All three. Or think about your own mother in this situation as well. Okay, so we'll sit for about 3 minutes. Okay, any comment or question on that second cause? Mothers have been kind to us. They really have, haven't they? Okay, so the third cause is repaying the kindness of our mother sentient beings. You can also say, all my father sentient beings. So, as I said earlier, you know, this comment, even if we carried our parents on our back our entire life, we could not repay their kindness. Is a very powerful statement about what our parents gave to us, you know, which is this human life and the opportunity to really utilize it well. So much of this one, I feel, is really helping open our minds and hearts to other beings, to begin to diminish this strong self-centeredness and self-interest, and open our attention to the needs and the conditions of other people and beings around us, all sentient beings, you know, not just those that we're particularly interested in at this time. So really looking at all beings and repaying their kindness. So in this way, you know, it helps us look at how can we offer kindness to others? How can we repay all the things that people have done to benefit who we are and to enjoy in our lives? You know? And some of it is as easy as just taking a few minutes to listen to someone or inquiring after them to see how they're doing, what's going on in their life, what you can do to help. And sometimes that's all they need. You know, it's just someone to pay like 2 minutes attention to what's going on for them. And so in this way, you know, I think just common respect and courtesy and attention can make a big difference. So think about that, not only for your friends, but for strangers, people that you don't see very often, or there's, you know, you just kind of bump into them on the road or at the market or somewhere, people that you're standing in line with at the post office, you know, just to offer some a smile, some courtesy, you know, to some friendship, and then also to our enemies, you know, to consider the suffering that our enemies go through. Sometimes, you know, when we're polarized with someone, it's all about me, my suffering, my pain. You're in my way. You're creating problems for me. But no, when we can turn it around and look at their pain, know, their suffering, what's going on for them to help push through and cut through this sense of self-centeredness that can really break this sense of just of our own self-interest. You know? So you brought up His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and it was so beautiful to watch the whole program of his receiving the gold medal in the rotunda on Wednesday. You know, and His Holiness has taken an unwavering, firm stance on nonviolence towards this resolution of the issue between Tibet and China. And in that, in his unwavering stance, it's just created world friendships. Now, it's just remarkable, even among his own people. Some of the younger Tibetans felt like the Dalai Lama was being too soft, and that if he took a stronger stance towards China, that there would be more change effected. But look at what's happened. It's just astounding what happened to see, you know, even the Democrats and Republicans smiling and appreciating each other for a little while, you know. And it was very extraordinary. And, you know, to me, it's such a confirmation of practice and resolve about practice and the power of the Dharma. I mean, the Buddha says hatred doesn't end by hatred. Hatred ends by love. And His Holiness has just strongly forged ahead in this nonviolent stance. And to me, you know, it's like giving the best gift to us by His actions, by His actions. He's totally living the Dharma and practicing the Dharma. And this is where we can actually repay the kindness of our mothers. We can actually repay the kindness by living and practicing the Dharma. So, you know, it's kind of daunting to think we can never repay our parents. But we can if we utilize our lives in the way that the full intention was meant to be, you know, to really think of our potential to bring happiness to others and to relieve suffering in the world. So it's a very powerful form of practice, you know, it's totally engaged. Okay, you had a question?
I think the way I see it, there's a great problem about thinking of all sentient beings as your mothers, because most people find it hard to believe that reincarnation includes being born as animals. There's like people that believe in reincarnation, but they can't believe that reincarnation includes the animal kingdom.
Right.
So I'm pretty convinced them that that's also possible.
Yes.
They won't be able to have an intimate feeling with animals.
Yeah, you can't convince anyone. It really has to come from your own experience and contemplation, because it's an obscure phenomena. You know, we can trace back our, you know, it's like I don't remember being born even. I don't remember being born, you know, but my first memories are of my parents, and they said, you know, you're our child. So it's, you know, we can trace back material phenomena, but the nature, again, I was saying, you know, the nature of consciousness is not a material thing. And so, you know, to think when we die, does our consciousness just get buried in the earth or wherever the dissolving constituents of our body are going? Does the consciousness just dissolve at that point? Well, that's one particular view too, you know, that when this material body breaks up, so does our consciousness, and that's it, and there's no more. So it's not something that we can convince others of.
But once you realize the nature of, like, Alaya Vishnana or Tathagata Garbha, you can see very easily they can take any form.
Yes.
It's like the basis of all consciousness.
Oh, right, but yeah, so this is where study and contemplation comes in, but you can study every book of every faith, and for all of us, regardless of what tradition we're in, there's got to be that leap, you know, that leap of faith. And I think, you know, on the level of how do we live in the world, then there comes that, how do we relate to others, you know? And so so when this particular practice is helping us understand our interrelatedness with others and the kindness of others. But going back to that very first point, all sentient beings have been our mothers, you know, that's a huge one. It's easier to think about all beings have been kind, or thinking about repaying their kindness. But that first point of all beings have been our mothers does require, acceptance or not acceptance.
Human arrogance is a big obstacle. Humans tend to be very arrogant when it comes to the animal kingdom.
Yes, we are extremely arrogant, and that's why a practice like this helps to dissolve that arrogance. Yeah, a meditation practice like this helps us to begin to cut that self-interest and superior, and all lowly beings on the planet are there for my use. Yeah, so this is what the practice is all about. Uh-huh. Merle?
So this concept of mother then incorporates this idea that it's easy to accept the incarnation because we're just passing from mother to mother.
Yeah. In some ways it's easier, some ways it's tougher, you know? I mean, in some ways it's tougher when I think, who's going to be my mom next time around? I get kind of scared, you know.
It's an interest into accepting reincarnation.
Yes, right. Yeah, that does help too.
The teaching that you need, that will be your next one.
The teaching that we need?
That will be your next mother.
That will be your next mother. Yes, yeah. Well, another way, you know, is like saying, Mom, seeing everyone, Mom, and it's that's quite an interesting one, too, you know, and for, and one time I was in Colorado, and I was walking back to my apartment, and it was snowing and slushy and muddy, and there was an older woman in the shotgun seat, driving off with her husband, I guess. And just this strong sense of mom came up. I mean, she was Caucasian, so I wouldn't even look like her, you know, and I'm sure she would have called the police if I ran up to her calling mom, but you know, this very strong sense of my mother came up, and to me it was very very helpful to my practice, you know, to actually experience that. And that's what this is too. You know, like Geshe-la is continually saying, it's not about just feeding our intellect, but really bringing it into our heart, into our emotions, bringing it into our lives. You know, so this whole side of contemplating this is something to bring it into your own experience. Yeah. Okay, so repaying the kindness, okay? Think about your potential as a human being. And in the teachings it also says, this is your best opportune condition as a human being, because we have the mix of suffering and happiness. We have the gap, you know, of this room to reflect upon where are we going, what are we doing, where did we come from, and to think about consequences of our actions. You know, so to consider repaying the kindness of others, and you know, it also makes you stretch and think about karma and conditions, and that no situation occurs in your life if you did not create the conditions for it. And when it goes onto these more subtle levels, you think, I created the causes and conditions for these particular situations in my life. Now, and rather than attacking it, denouncing it, warring with it, hurting it, blaming it, you know, in this poor why me situation, look at the situation of how can I transform this, whatever situation it is, into my spiritual practice. Okay, so this is repaying the kindness and considering the kindness of others in that. So let's sit for 3 minutes on this. So the fourth point is cultivating love and specifically wishing others happiness and the causes of happiness. Okay. So wishing them to be happy in their lives, and how is it that they can create the causes for happiness in their lives? So again, you know, it helps us to look at how no matter who we are, we wish for happiness in our lives. No matter whether we are high or low, or you know, east or west, or animal or human being, all beings want happiness. And so, you know, in this one, then we're looking at how can we repay and generate acts of kindness to make our relationships more open and receptive, and that you know, just creating through our own actions more happiness in people's lives. So in so here again, you know, it's helping in our Dharma practice to think about interdependence and our interrelatedness with all beings. So here, you know, it's we need to observe how we conduct ourselves with others, you know, that to observe whether our actions are appropriate, and that we're treating others kindly, and that we will experience that in return as well. So here I had a question here. When a challenging, difficult person does not respond to you favorably, what do you do? If you're trying to practice. Mm-hmm.
I had an experience like this when I was first studying Kundalini Yoga, and finally took the question after trying everything I could think of.
This is in relation.
Okay. Making my life miserable. I worked with him, and he was in charge of me, more or less. And so what my teacher told me, his name is Vidarjota, and his teacher is our main teacher, was Yogi Bhajan. And he said that at that point, what you need to do is change your attitude, since you can't do anything about changing it. And we had a lot of discussion about just exactly how you might do that. And even though it was difficult, that was the only resort I had left, because this person was not going to do anything different. And when I did manage to do it, the better I got at it, the more the situation changed. But the person didn't change. You know, it was me. It was a very awakening insight.
Great, yeah. Any other comment on how you've dealt with that?
By my arm. And then when once you have this feeling of, like, this poor thing, you know, I just don't want to hurt it, and I want it to be, you know, not suffering and be happy and hold it, it changed the whole concept of a snake. Because everybody's seen a snake, you know. And it changed the whole thing about women too. You know, like, oh, women are like that, and my daughter too. So then the next thing you know, she wanted to hold it. And I said, yes, but you have to be very careful, because if you drop it, it didn't have any voice, it didn't have any legs and arms to protect itself. So you just have to have a lot of understanding about wanting to care for this. And made it so that she's not afraid of snakes. And you can, it's of course poisonous ones. I didn't want to touch anything, but this is a little, it really is interesting how when your mind changes towards something that you think is going to be very, like an enemy. And you just have this love start coming because you don't want it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, yeah. It's like you know from your heart when the love is flowing in relationship to others, and this real sincere wish to just share that love with others, you know, to have that sense of care. I'm going to combine this one with the cultivating compassion before we do the short meditation on it. But cultivating compassion is wishing others to be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. So while happiness is wishing others to have happiness, cultivating love is wishing others to have happiness and the causes of happiness. Cultivating compassion is wishing others to be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. No? So again, you know, look at how can we generate greater love and openness, receptivity to other beings, particularly when they are suffering. And in samsara, they say that we're all suffering, regardless of what realm we're in. So again, there's this God realm, you think of even on a psychological level, of someone who has everything, who thinks that they're everything, who lives as I'm everything. How do you relieve their suffering, and how do you give them happiness? And then again, you know, for someone who's constantly warring and angry and competitive, how do you relieve their suffering? How do you give them happiness? So you can think of each of the different realms in that way too. You know, with animals, because that's the, besides humans, with animals, that's the one that we can relate with the most, and they are incredible teachers for us. Animals are profound teachers, and watch the way, you know, it's like we're drawn to certain animals, and for others we have total aversion towards, you know, and how can we think about increasing the happiness or removing the suffering of those animals that we have aversion toward. So that becomes a very strong practice too, you know, to bring it out into your own life, not that, you know, with other beings, regard when their station is a lot higher than you, your boss, say, you know, how can you relieve their suffering and offer them victory and happiness, or beings that are your subordinates, how sometimes we have a sense of superiority in relating to others as well. How can we offer kindness to them and relieve their suffering? So, you know, Geshe-la had said in class one day, through Tenzin Lin's translation, you know, that we have to check that we are not biased and discriminating when we're relating to others. No, so again, also wishing enemies, friends, and strangers to be free from suffering, and that they, regardless of who they are, they want happiness. No? So you think about how, in suffering, when beings are suffering, sometimes we act in horrendous, terrible ways, right? That when we're overcome by delusions of hatred or acquisition or competitiveness, when we're overcome by grief or pain in our own lives, how we act, and that we're overcome by these particular conditions, that sometimes we're acting horribly, miserably. No, and these, in those conditions, we need to offer people even more kindness, even more tolerance. So let's sit with that for a few minutes, 3 minutes. Okay, so we come to the sixth cause, which is altruistic intention, or the exceptional thought. No, this meditation practice, this contemplation practice, then helps us come to this place of really having the wish yourself, I'm going to relieve all mother sentient beings from suffering and bring them to happiness. No, it becomes your cause, or you bring it into your own practice. I did this one course at Naropa where it was called Spiritual Modes of Social Action. And what we looked at were some famous people and what they did in their lives and their actions to help others. But the take that my professor worked with it was looking at part of the shadow side of these beings, the shadow side, like what was driving them. And one of the points that came up, which was really interesting, was for all of these beings, it was, I'm the one who has to do this. And you think about thinking of the strength and the power that comes with that kind of intention that says, I'm the one, I have to do this. You know? And to think, this practice then just helps us to develop the strength and the power to be able to say, I'm the one. And your altruistic intention truly becomes yours. It's like you step into the shoes of living that practice. Now, so it helps us to purify our selfish emotions and selfish swirl of, you know, that my own attitude is like, what's in it for me? When you can drop that and really think, how can I benefit others? How can I work and help others and engage in practice to benefit them, you know? And in this way, a lot of this practice then is just helping push us and closer and closer to understanding this view of interdependent relationship with all beings, to understand a more subtle point in Buddhist practice about our interrelatedness and going not only from friendships and relationships with others, but looking at all phenomena in the way of being interrelated. So in this way, then we can break this sense of independence and separation and not having any part of the experience of that boss is, you know, diabolically opposed from me and totally separate, but then looking at how it arises in our experience, like you were saying too, you know, it's like giving you the opportunity to wake up and see the other person's suffering, see the other person's limitation perhaps, push us out of our own limitations, you know, to stretch us and to see how can we practice in a way that embraces others in a larger way. So, again, rather than being innocent and free, and I'm the one with the halo above my head all the time, you know, but seeing, well, there are conditions for this, and this arose, and if all beings were my mother, then, you know, I've got karmic relationships with everybody, and some things are going to ripen, you know, and so how do I relate to that, and how do I really cause the completion and ending of negativity and delusions. Now, how can I transform that into real bodhisattva practice?
You would also plant new seeds in that instance too, if you can, with the person, in terms of trying to cherish them or something to hopefully transform.
Yeah.
The relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. You're creating some meritorious actions, creating some happiness in the life of yourself, you know, and the other person. And you know how that has such a powerful effect, you know, when someone has been kind to you, or it just brightens up your day somehow, it has this long-reaching effect about with everyone else that you meet throughout the day. No, you bring happiness into others' lives, into that person also being relieved of maybe a conflict that had been occurring. It's ended. No, everybody feels lightened up. They can continue on. It's fantastic. Yeah. So this altruist intention too is that side of practice of really. Completing and not further pounding in further negativities, you know, but really benefiting others. So rather than being offended when a difficult, challenging event arises, you know, we can think about that and how, you know, negativities don't arise in a vacuum, and somehow I had something to do with this equation too. Know that that it's also including ourselves, oftentimes, and you know, how is it that we keep coming up with the sense of being so innocent and pure, that it's always them, you know? It's very curious. Okay, so and then they say too, you know, it's like if you trace back, you can often see that there were causes for the way certain things arose, and that if you trace it back and you see that you did not have any particular input in this particular interaction, then it's something arising from the further past, you know, coming to fruition and ripening. Okay, so let's stop and contemplate that for a moment. Think about how you can shift from it's not the right time, I'm not prepared, to this is the right time to practice, and I'm the one. Okay, so we come from the six causes to the one result, and the result of bodhicitta. Again, bodhi is enlightenment, citta is mind, so enlightened mind. And here it means wishing to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. All sentient beings. All sentient beings. Not just the ones that you want to choose. Okay. So it helps you, again, this practice helps you to see dependent arising, our interrelatedness with all beings. No? Again, the causes and conditions. It's not about waiting till better conditions come along. No, the condition is right there, right before you, right now. and you know, that waiting till the let me get enlightened first, and then I can deal with you. But you know, it's like you're having opportunities to practice every day. So to really take the opportunities of developing kindness and love and compassion for friends, enemies, and strangers as you relate to beings every day. And it's not, you know, it's like, I'm in a hurry now. Let me go home and take a hot bath and meditate, and then we can, then I can talk about it. But, you know, sometimes we have to put ourselves aside and then just deal with the situation at hand. Okay, you've got all the components together with who you are right now. So there's somebody who gave a talk, I forget where it was, but it was called Come As You Are. Come As You Are, you know, it's like you don't have to wait till you've got yourself all together first before you're going to practice equanimity and compassion. So so this one result of bodhicitta, you know, this strong wish to attain enlightenment for all beings. There's the aspiring bodhicitta, the wish to attain enlightenment, and then the engaging bodhicitta, which is where you actually engage in the practice. So let's think about that, the opportunity to engage in practice. Okay, so we'll complete with that. And so again, think of the causes. All beings have been our mothers. All beings, our mothers, sentient beings, have been kind to us. Consider repaying their kindness by cultivating love, wishing them happiness in the causes. Cultivating compassion, wishing them to be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. The exceptional thought. I am going to relieve beings from suffering and bring them to happiness. Bringing the one result, the enlightened mind. I had wanted to end about half an hour earlier so we could do the Sogha offering. Can we still do that? Can we just take a short break? And so we'll stretch our legs and then do the Sogha offering in about 15 minutes. Would that work all right for people? Any other considerations? Okay. So we'll do the dedication, and then for those of you who need to go on, you can go, and you're totally welcome to do the Sogha offering as offerings to the Guru and our lineage teachers after a short break. Okay. So we'll do the dedication on the last page. Because of these merits, may we quickly become Guru Lord Buddha and lead each and every sentient being into his enlightened realm. May the precious bodhicitta that has not yet been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. May the precious view of emptiness, shunyata, that has not been received be received, and may that which has been received be increased and not decreased. By the virtue of offering to you assembly of Buddhas visualized before me, this mandala built on a base resplendent with flowers, saffron water, and incense, adorned with Mount Meru and the four continents, as well as with the sun and moon, may all sentient beings share its effects. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamniyataya Me. In the land of snowy mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. Lord Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, may you stay until samsara ends. Okay, so we'll do... Oh, I have a couple quick announcements. December 9th is a Sunday, December 9th, and about 1:30 after class, we're going to have a guest speaker. His name is Pema Chunjur. And he escaped from Tibet in 1959 and became a Kalun. Tenzin, Kalun, how would you, cabinet minister? As a cabinet minister of the Tibetan government in exile. And so he worked in the Department of Security for the Tibetan government in India and was also a professor at the university in Chandigarh in India, teaching Tibetan language for almost 20 years. But he now lives in Long Beach, of all places, with his family, and they run a family business. So he's going to be speaking on December 9th, 1:30 after class. So we'll have class, take a lunch break, and then people can come back and learn a little bit more about the Tibetan culture and the people and community. So please come and tell others to they're welcome. And the other last thing is we need some one or two more volunteers to help clean and prepare the center on Saturday mornings. Frank and Vladimir and Venerable Chappell and Jim and Akiko have been doing it for a long, long time, and we need some new volunteers to help. So Saturday morning, if anybody can help, please see me. Okay. It varies, you know. People usually just come 9-ish, 10-ish, and then, yeah. Yay, thank you. Okay, so we'll do our bows.
We'll take a short break, and for those of you who would like to stay, we have these offerings that we share during the prayer service. And welcome.